Okay, we'll start here on the top of Kuf Lamed Chet Amud Aleph by the two dots. Gemara is continuing to look at the Mishnah in terms of what is given to the Kohen. And in the Mishnah, it told us, V'kama noten lo, how much do you have to give to the Kohen? And then it talks about the fact that what the Kohen must receive is 5 sla'im worth of wool, Behuda, which are equal to 10 sla'im in the Galil, in order to make a Begid Katan. Now, Tana, lo shila ben nenu, v'yitz nenu lo, not that he should bleach it and then give it to him. Ela shila ben nenu kohen. The obligation to bleach it is on the kohen, not on the individual. But the purpose of talking about the bleaching is that v'yamod al chamesh sla'im, that after he bleaches it, after he cleans it, what remains should be worth 5 sela, or should have the weight of 5 sela in order to make the begad katan. We're interested in the outcome over here. So since the outcome is a begad katan, you have to give him enough wool that will result in a begad katan. So even though we don't obligate you to do the libun process, the kohen is the one who will do the libun, but the kohen must end up, the result must be that the kohen has 5 sela worth of bleached or wool that was mitzalabin. So that is the qualification for the amount that is given to the kohen. Now, kedei lasod begad katan, minahane milah. Where do we get this fact from that you have to have a begad katan? Amar Rav Yehoshua ben Levi, we saw this in yesterday's daf, because in the context in which it is written, amar kra la'amod lisharet. The context in which the matnot kuna that are mentioned here, which is Reshita Geiz, the matnot of Zerah Lechaim and Keba, and the Truma, was in the context of the Kohanim's special status, as well as their obligations to do the Avodah, to work. So there it says, Lamod L'Sharet, Davar Shu Rayu L'Sherut, something that is proper for service in the Mikdash, Maynehu. What is that? Which Beged is it that we're talking about here? The Avnet. Okay, we're looking here for a Beged that is made out of wool, that will be useful to the Kohen in his Sherut, Lifnei Hashem. So what we're looking for is one of the 4 big day kuhuna that the Kohen Hedyot wears. Kohen Hedyot wears Michnesayim, he wears a ketonet, he wears a mikbat, and he wears an avnet, which is the belt. So the belt obviously being the smallest of the big day kihuna. So ema mi'il. Why are you picking the avnet? If you have to pick a beged, why not pick the mi'il, which is a mi'il techelet? That's made out of wool as well. Wouldn't that be a better choice? And that would require him to give a much larger gift in order to make a mi'il versus an avnet. So the Gemara invokes the principle of tafasta miruba lo tafasta. Tafasta muat. Tafasta. When it comes to making a decision about what we do, we're going to take the least chidush that qualifies or gives us a proper understanding of the pasuk. Or the pasuk here says, give him something that he can use for sherut. Our choices are mi'il, our choice is avnet. If I go ahead and say, okay, the answer is mi'il, I'll say to you, how do you know it's mi'il? It could be avnet, because then he would have to give less, and it's subsumed under the term lamod l'sharet. On the other hand, if he gives him lamod l'sharet, he gives him avnet, then you can't ask why didn't you give him me'il, because I've already qualified. I've been mikayem the pasuk of lamod l'sharet. So that's the idea. If taras tafasta meruba, if you went ahead and said me'il, you said the cloak, I could ask the question of you, you can fulfill the pasuk of lamod l'sharet with a smaller item. Why are you choosing me'il? On the other hand, tafasta mu'at, if you take the smaller item, the avnet, I can't question your choice of avnet is lamod l'sharet, because then you fulfill the pasuk. Yes, you could fulfill it another way, but you still have accomplished what it is, and there's nothing less than that you could have done in order to accomplish the pasuk. So now Gemara says, "Ve'ema kippa shel tzemer." Why don't we talk about his woolen cap? And this is not the Pope's cap, but rather the cap of the Kohen Gadol. D'tanya kippa shel tzemer hayta munechet berosh Kohen Gadol. He had this woolen cap, alea tzitz atun. And on it the tzitz was placed, the kayim meshen emar, v'samto oto al p'til techelet. P'til techelet, which is discussed. There are a number of psukim about the tzitz and the p'til techelet. Some of them say that it's ala mitznefet, some of them say it's under tzitz, some of them say over the tzitz. Rashi, Chazal, to reconcile the psukim, talk about how these woolen strings, these blue strings, were tied to the tzitz, and how they went over the mitznefet. And so this is one of them, that the tzitz, with its p'til techelet, sat on top of this kippah, this cap, or the mitznefet of the Kohen Gadol. So Amar Kra, huvanav. Now there's a requirement that it be for who? Uvanav. For the Kohen Gadol and his children. So that would only make it something that's qualified for the Kohen Gadol, not something that's qualified for the Kohen Hedyot. Davar shaveh, aron uvanav. My question then says, avet nami lo shavi. Wait a minute, the belt is not necessarily something that is equivalent between the Kohen Hediot and the Kohen Gadol. The Gemara says, Anicha leman d'omar. It goes well according to one who says, Avneto shel Kohen Gadol, lo zehu avneto shel Kohen Hediot, Shapir. Then it works out well. So now this is the opposite of what you've thought, because it's discussing the Kohen Gadol's bigadim on Yom HaKippurim. We know that the Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim wears the four big de lavan out of the eight bigadim of the Kohen Gadol. The question of those four big de kuna that he's wearing, are they equivalent to the four bigadim of the Kohen Hediot? So there's a machloket in the Gemara and Yoma with regards to just the belt. Everything else, the tonet, the michnasayim, and then obviously the hat's different because the Kohen Gadol wears a mitznefet, Kohen Hediot wears a mikbat, but nevertheless, the avnet is a machloket as to whether the avnet of the Kohen Gadol is the same as the avnet of the Kohen Hediot. According to the opinion, it says that avneto shel Kohen Gadol lo ze avneto shel Kohen Hediot is not the same as the regular Kohen Hediot belt, and it works well. Shapir. Why? Because the belt of the Kohen Gadol that is made for Yom HaKippurim is made out of boots. It's made out of linen. There is no wool in it. So if you say that the Kohen Hediot's belt is not equivalent to the belt of the Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim, then the Kohen Hediot's belt would contain kilayim in it. It would contain wool in it. And therefore, it would qualify over here for what we're looking for as a beg katan that has wool in it. Because the avnet of the Kohen Hediot would be equivalent to the Kohen Gadol on a regular day. And therefore, the avnet would contain kilayim. Elo, the mando amar, according to when it says, Zehu avnet toshel Kohen Hediot, the avnet, the belt that the Kohen Gadol wears on Yom HaKippurim, which is made out of boots, which is just made out of pishtan, out of linen, then the Kohen Hediot's belt only has linen in it. If it only has linen in it, there's no wool. Then how do we accomplish the pasuku of hu uvanav? That you have to have Aaron and his children have the same, there has to be a beggar that is qualified for everybody, not just for the Kohen Gadol. So ma yikud ha-meimar? So there is a shame avnet be'olam. Now they also have an avnet. The Kohen Hediot has an avnet. It just, it doesn't have wool in it. But they are shayach to the parsha of avnet. As opposed to the kippah shel tzemer, which is a beggar of the Kohen Gadol, that has no relevance to the Kohen Hediot. It's not relevant whatsoever to the Kohen Hediot. Therefore, it would not qualify under the pasuk of hu uvanav. Whereas here by the avnet, hu uvanav do wear an avnet. The avnet that we're speaking about is that of the Kohen Gadol, which has wool in it. At least according to this opinion, where this is the only avnet that has wool in it, as opposed to the one of the Kohen Gadol and Yom HaKippurim and a Kohen Hediot, which only has linen in it. Right, so now the Gemara continues. Lo yispik litno. If he didn't have, he didn't give it to him before he dies it, then it's already his konet b'shinui. Itmar. Gazaz umachar rishona. He goes ahead and he shears, and then he sells it. So he has a series of sheep here. He has five sheep that are here. And he goes ahead, he shears the first one, and sells it. Shears the second one, sells it. Does that qualify? Does that gziza? Does that shearing qualify to be mechayev him in reshit hageiz? Or because of the fact that he sold it beforehand, that already takes it out of the parsha of the reshit hageiz? Rav Chisda amar chayav, benatan bar Hoshea amar patur. So machloket amuraim here as to what is the din when he sells it after each shearing of the sheep. Rav Chisda amar chayav da hagazaz. The requirement is reshit hageiz. When he started shearing that sheep was sheared with five other sheep in place. So as long as he's begun to shear with five sheep in place, that gziza, that shearing was all done in his possession. All five of them will be sheared in his possession. And therefore he's chayav in reshit hageiz. Natan bar Hoshea amar patur. Be'idna dekam mele shi'ura. Be'inan tzoncha avaleka. At the moment you reach the shiur, which is the shiur of five tzon, at that moment, it has to be in your possession, and it's no longer in your possession. You've sold already the first shearings. So when you hit the threshold of five, the earlier shearings already sold. So they don't have in your possession the amount of five tzon at the time that he thinks the chiyuv is devolving on him. So the machloket between them is, when is the chiyuv of reshit hageiz devolve? According to Rav Chisda, it happens at the moment you start to shear. When you shear, as long as there are five sown there, and as long as you shear all five of them, now you had a moment of chiyuv, a threshold of chiyuv, which is that you did shearing of five sheep. That's all that is required. On the other hand, Rabbi Natan bar Hoshea says the threshold is that you must have all five sheep sheared and in your possession. So it's only once you reach the last one that you're shearing it, then will you have a chiyuv because it must have all of the shearings in your possession at that point in time? So it's non. Our Mishnah. Halukeach geiz tzono shalovit kochavim patur mereshit hageiz. Someone who purchases the shearings of a non-Jew's tzon, non-Jew's sheep, then he is patur from reshit hageiz. Now this is even if he purchases it while it's still on the animal. He purchases the animal to shear the animal. But since it's not tzoncha, it's tzon oved kochavim, it's patur mereshit hageiz. The implications from this are, ha tzono ligzoz chayav. Had it been his tzon, and he had done it, he would have been chayav. Amai, kochad b'chad, batar giza nafkala mirshutei. So as opposed to the case in our Mishnah, where he purchases the shearings on the sheep, over here he doesn't just purchase the shearings, the goy gives him the sheep in his possession temporarily to do the shearing. So it's not simply that he's buying the shearings, he's getting the whole goat. It's like almost like a matana, manat achzir. He's giving it to his possession, and then it reverts back to the possession of the goy as soon as he finishes the shearing. The goy hands it to him, becomes his tzon to shear, and then after he sheared it, it goes back into the possession of the goy. So in this case, what does he do? He goes ahead and he starts shearing the animals. After he shears the first animal, then animal automatically reverts back to the possession of the goy. So that's what the Gemara is asking. Well, amai, kol chad v'chad batar giza, after it's sheared, nafkalei mirshutei, and it's not in his possession. So you don't have tzon cha, five tzon, when you hit the threshold of the shiur of five tzon. So this would be a question on Rabbi Natan Bar Hoshea. That Bar Hoshea says it has to be in your possession at the time that you hit the shiur. And that won't be the case here, because as you shear each one, it will revert back to the goy's ownership. So Targumah Rav Chisda, libe de Rav Natan Bar Hoshea. Rav Chisda answered on behalf of his Baal Machloket, and so Gonj Hiknam Lo Koslo Shemyo. Conditions of the sale were not that he purchases them as soon as it's done shearing, it reverts back to the Obed Kochavim's possession, but rather the conditions of the sale were you have it for 30 days, you can shear it during that 30-day period. So it doesn't revert back to the ownership of the Obed Kochavim until the expiration of the 30 days. So as long as he shears all of them within the 30-day period, they will all be in his possession when he hits the threshold of the shear of five tzon. And therefore, our Mishnah is not a diok against Rav Natan Bar Hoshea.
We explain this Gemara according to the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchot Bikurim, Perek Yud, Halacha Tedvav says, Rishit Hageiz Mitzvata B'tchila, Him Frish, Ben Be'emsa B'mesof Yatza. Hayolo Chamesh Tzon V'Gazaz, Achat Mehem Bilvad, U'machar Gizata. V'achar Kach Gazaz Shnei U'machar Gizata. V'achar Kach Gazaz Shlishit U'machar Gizata, Kol Mitztarfot Rishit Hageiz. V'chayav Afilu Achar Kama Shanim. According to the Rambam, the selling that was done here was the selling of the Giza itself. On the other hand, Rashi over here explains the Gemara that the Mechira was the Mechira of the animals themselves. After he sheared the animal, he didn't give away the shearings, he sold the animal. And the requirement of Tzoncha that we're talking about here is not on the shearing and the animal, but the animal itself. Since the animal is no longer in your possession, even though you have the shearings that are left over, Rashi wants to suggest that this machloket between Rav Chisda and Rav Natan Bar Hoshea is about that case, where he sold the underlying animal that was sheared. And that's why in the Mishnah they're asking from the case of where the animal reverts back to the original owner, to the goy, because you still have the shearings, but the animal's now gone back to the original owner, it's reverted back to the original owner. And so that's the way Rashi explains the Gemara. We explained it according to the Rambam that it talks about the gizata, the shearings that were sold, and not the underlying animal that was sold.
Halukeach geiz tzono shel chevero. Here we had in our Mishnah the case where he's shearing the sheep, and then who is obligated in the shearings here? Is it the mocher, the seller, or lokeach, or the buyer? And that depended on whether there was a residual left with the seller. If the seller sold everything within that category to the buyer, it's the buyer's obligation. If the seller left something behind, it was the seller's obligation. So now the Gemara wants to know about that part of the Mishnah. Who is the author? Mantana, Teicha Deika Shiura Gabi Mocher, when there's a residual with the seller, Batar Mocher Azlinan, then the seller is obligated in taking care of the situation. So I'm Rav Chisda, Rav Yehuda, Chisda says it's Rav Yehuda, Detnan, HaMocher Klachei Ilan Betoch Sadeyu. Someone who sells the trees that is found within his field. Rashi explains that the reason they're calling him kelach over here, kelach is the stalk usually, it means the hard part, the trunk, because this is not a field of trees. It's not a stei ilan. It's a stei tvua. It's a field that's normally planted with grains or with something else. There happen to be a number of trees in this field. So when he sells them the trees, he's not selling them anything to do with the land, he's just selling him the trees itself. So he sold him the trees. Notain peya l'chol echad ve'echad. He has got to give, the buyer has got to give peya on each of the trees. Now the trees are not joined, they're not considered to be a single entity because we're not in a steilan, we're not in a field of trees. So they have to be these individual trees that are spread out amongst the field. And therefore each one will require a giving of peya. You can't jointly give peya on them. Because again, he's selling them the trees, not the land. So there's nothing that joins these trees together to make them into a single entity. Then Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Eimatai, when's that true? Bizvan shlush shi'er bal sadeh. That's as long as the bal sadeh didn't leave anything over. Aval shi'er bal sadeh noten peya l'kol. If the owner of the field left anything behind, he gives peya on the whole field. Meaning that he's going to have to give peya for the trees, and the buyer will not have to give peya. He probably could give one on all the trees because he owns the land. So he has a force that joins them together. Amar le Rava, v'amar hu damar. So Rava says, didn't you explain? Here, we're making a suggestion. Rav Chista is making a suggestion that Rav Yehuda is the author. And Rava says, Rav Chista, didn't you explain Rav Yehuda here? Da'amar v'hu shitchil balasadeh l'ktzor. That's only true if the owner of the field had begun to harvest. Because by peya, the chiyul devolves upon the person when he starts to harvest. You are required to leave peya from the moment you start to harvest. So as long as the owner of the field had begun to harvest, the obligation for peya already devolved upon him. He is the one obligated in peya. Now when he goes and sells the trees, he cannot discharge that obligation all of a sudden. He can't get rid of the obligation. Once he's chayav, he's got to take care of the obligation. So that'll be different than our case over here. In the case over there, the obligation started from the moment he started to harvest, and now he's obligated. So he can't just throw it away by selling it. In our case of the shearings, Bereshita Geiz, when you're talking about when you become chayav, you're only chayav once you've sheared. He can't, just because he sold the items, he wasn't chayav yet. If he's not chayav yet, how can you obligate him in the shearings that he never was in his possession when that took place, when the chiyuv came? So Gemara says, V'chitayim al-chanami, v'hu shitchil exos. So if you want to say over here, oh, the same thing here, that the seller began to shear. So Bishlam Ahatam, over there by the Matnot Aniim, by Peyat, says, the pasuk starts, V'kutzuchem et k'tzira tzuchem, k'tiv. Midana da'atchil iktzor, mechayei b'kul asadeh. K'tzuchem et k'tzira tzuchem, that's the threshold. That's the point when you become obligated. And what's that threshold? When you start to harvest. So it says here, as soon as you begin to harvest, you are chayav on the entire field. Over here, just because you start to shear one animal does not obligate you in your entire flock. You have to, the obligation happens as you shear each animal. Each animal that is sheared will join the obligation of Reshita Geiz. But you can't have a single animal obligate you in all the animals. There's no connection between the animals. There's no single entity here which says as soon as you shear, begin to shear one, all five of them are chayav. That's not true. You're not chayav until you complete the five. And you're only chayav for those that you shear. So there's no concept that you have by payah that you have over here that the seller becomes obligated at some point and then he can't sell it. So that can't be the answer. So Rava disagrees with Rav Chista and says, no, this is the author of our Mishnah, which is the Tanan. From the previous parak, the Mishnah about the Zerua L'chaim Nekeba. So he says, sell me the innards of this cow. And it has included in it are the Zerua L'chaim Nekeba. The buyer, notanan Kohen, he has to give them to Kohen, and cannot reduce the price. Why not? Because the underlying assumption of the buyer is that he only can buy, he's going to buy what he's entitled to buy. He knows that he can't buy the matnot kihuna. So the fact that the seller left them in doesn't change anything about the pricing. Because when he went to the seller, to the butcher, and says, sell me the innards, he knows that accepted from that is going to be the keba. The keba doesn't belong to the butcher for him to sell. It belongs to the kohen. So here he sets a price. He's setting a price based on the matnot kuhuna not being a part of it. Now when the butcher has the matnot kuhuna in there, the butcher should have given them to the kohen. Nevertheless, you as the buyer now have to give that to the kohen. It's your obligation to give because it's be'en. Therefore you give it to the kohen, but you can't reduce the price because you shouldn't have expected to get the matnot kuhuna on this thing. On the other hand, bimishkau, if he bought it based on weight, then notanan the kohen, once again he has to give it to the kohen because it's be'en, it's extant, it's right here. Now he can reduce the price from the butcher. Butcher sold it to him on weight, then the kebab was included in that weight. The matnot kuhuna were included in the weight. That's not something that the buyer had intended. He intended only to pay for the weight of what he can utilize. That's his. If he's paying for the weight of the matnot kuhuna, that's incorrect. So now, Alma, What can we infer from our Mishnah in the previous perek? Matnotu Kohen, lo mizavininish. People do not sell the Matnot Kuna. As Tosafot points out over here, perish, lo mizavne kamo lo zavne. It's not that people don't sell. Here we do see that the Mocher sold it. It's not that people don't sell, but rather, one does not sell the Matnot Kuna. Lo zavne, they're not sold. You're unable to sell them. You don't own them in order to sell them. So yes, the Mocher put them in there and he threw them in, so they were sold to him. But he doesn't have the rights. The butcher doesn't have ownership in order to carry out a sale of the Matnot Kuna. Right, the buyer won't have ownership because the mocher doesn't have the right to sell it. It's outside of the realm of the transaction because nobody owns it here. The seller doesn't own it, and the buyer can't buy what the seller doesn't own, which the butcher doesn't own. So then, now, if we get to that underlying principle, then hochanami, matnot to koin no mizabininish. We can explain our mission in the same way. That the mocher here, when he sells the shearings, the underlying assumption is that the shearings that are being sold here are being sold absent of the matnot kuna, absent of the reshit hageiz. Hilkach, therefore, shear ha-mocher, the mocher left something behind, the mocher is chayav. Damar lei lokeach, the lokeach will say, matna de kohen gabeichi. The matna of the kohen is left by you. I didn't expect to purchase the matna of the kohen. I didn't expect to purchase the reshit hageiz, which doesn't belong to you. That belongs to the kohen. I expected to get wool I can utilize. Wool that I can utilize does not include the matana of the kohen. Therefore he says to the mocher, you sold me these animals, and the underlying assumption is that you have the matana of the kohen by you, and you're going to have to pay for the reshit hageiz. So you're going to have to give the reshit hageiz and what's left behind. Because I didn't intend to buy it, and people don't sell the matanot kuna. You don't have a right to sell it. Underlying principle which is being established here is that people don't transact in matanot kuna. So if he can't transact the matnot kuna, the underlying assumption is the mocher has it. The exception to the case, which is the case left by the butcher where he did it by weight. He did sell it, he cheated, and he made him pay for something that wasn't his. You make somebody pay for something that's not yours, then you gotta take care of it. Now, in the case of lo shi'er, lo keach chayav, darmer le mocher, tana tekoin lo zavni lecha. Mocher can say to the recipient, to the buyer, I didn't sell you the matnah of the kohen.
What did you pay for?
Right. I mean, it's there. It's on the animals. I didn't sell it to you. When I sold you for all my sheep in this category. And, okay, now you have to give a matana to the kohen. That wasn't included in the price. Because I can't sell it. When I sold it to you, that's not part of the price. I sold you everything besides the matana of the kohen. Now you have the obligation to give it because you have all the sheep. But I didn't sell you to it. That wasn't included in the price. It's a slightly different situation than the case of the matnot, the zera lechayim nekeba, because the matnot kuna you only chayav once you do shchita. There, the shchita already happened, and the obligation already took place, so that's why it's slightly different over here. Over here, the obligation only happens once you shear. That's when the chayuv comes about. But the underlying idea that you don't sell or transact in matnot kuna will be the same here. Just like by the zera lechayim nekeba, you don't transact in them. Therefore, the buyer should not assume that he's buying them, and not assume that he's paying for them, unless he's cheated, where he pays for the weight. And the same thing over here, by the reshit hageiz. The buyer assumes I'm not buying the matnot kuna. So therefore, if the seller has something left in this category, he's got to pay the matnot kuna. On the other hand, if the seller sold him everything, then the seller can say to him, I didn't sell you the matnot kuna. The price was just for everything besides the matnot kuna, because there's nothing left with them. What do you want me to give the matnot kuna from? You have the matnot kuna, I just didn't put that in the price. The price included everything minus the reshit hageiz, because I sold you everything.
You're not selling him an item that has matnot kuna in it.
It's not identifiable yet. Right. That is, it's a difficulty.
I think so.
You have to answer something along those lines, which is that the underlying assumption, everybody knows that reshit hageiz has to be removed from these animals at some point. Everybody knows that it's embedded in here. Alright, so now Rashi just notes over here, he says, that's what we've seen before. If the seller says, I'm selling you everything, then the kohen can't come after the seller. That before it was sheared, he sold it. Lo chalale chovat reshit hageiz, which is your question. There's no chovat reshit hageiz. Lo kurinim beg geiz toncha. B'taima dematitim ishum delo zavne. The reason for our Mishnah is not because of the obligation devolving, but rather he didn't sell it. The underlying assumption in the sale is that the matnot kuna remained with the seller. That's how when I sell you something, I'm selling you something, everything with utility. Like you can't sell tevel. It's the equivalent of selling tevel to someone. When I sell you produce, I have to sell you produce that is mitukan, that you're going to use. And when if I sell you tevel, then I'm assuming that I'm only going to be paying for the part that is utility here. I mean, it's asur to sell tevel. But this is the same idea here. You have sown that is quote-unquote tevel, the reshita geiz. So if I sell it to you, my assumption is, and tevel by reshita geiz doesn't have an impact in terms of making asur to use the wool. If you sell it to me, I'm assuming you're selling me the part that has utility. The part that has to be given to the queen, you don't sell. So therefore, you're going to be obligated to give it. It's as if you kept all the shemot and masrot by you, and you're going to give all of those to the kohen, and you're only selling the part that doesn't belong to the kohen. Now we're on to the next perek. Perek, again, this should be familiar to us. It's the same format that we've had in all the other perekim. And now the Gemara is going to actually discuss this format in this context, which is Shluch HaKohen, Noeg Baretz or B'chutz La'aretz. Applicable both in Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz, B'fnei HaBayit Shelo B'fnei HaBayit, whether the Mikdash is standing or not. Bichulin, avalo b'mukdashim. It's only applicable by chulin, by mukdashim, it's not applicable. Now, chomer b'kisui adam mishiluach hakein. Kisui adam has a chomra over shiluach hakein. Shekisui adam noheg v'chaya uba'of. Kisui adam is true of both, not just of folt, but also chayot. In addition, b'mizuman v'sheinu mizuman. It applies to whether the animal is owned or domesticated, or whether it's in the wild. Shiluach hakein enoheg ela ba'of. Shiluach hakein only applies by birds, not chayot. V'enu noheg ela sheinu mizuman. And it only applies to things that are not owned or domesticated, because the pasuk begins by shiluach hakein ki yikarei lucha, when you chance upon. So you chance upon is something that is obviously not domesticated, not something that you own, not something that's growing up in your possession. Ezehu sheinu mizuman. How do I define what is called ki yikarei lucha, that you happened upon it, that you don't own it, it's not domesticated? Kigon, avazim v'tanugolim, geese, and whether it's chicken, fowl, shikaninu bipardes, that set up shop, they nested in your orchard, that's called enu mizuman. Because in your orchard, you can't exert ownership on them. They left. They'll fly away whenever they want. They are independent of you, and therefore they're not considered to be mizuman. Avalim kananu bebayit. If they're in your house, I don't know if this is literally in the house, but it means in your chatzer, in your courtyard, they're in the area where the humans are living, then that is already considered to be mizuman. They're yours. You can grab them anytime you want. They're not flying away. They're dependent on you for food. Then they're called mizuman. V'chein yonei hardasiyot, the Herodian pigeons, patur mishiluach. They're also patur mishiluach because they're kept in the house. They're kept in the confines of where one lives. They don't live independently. They don't fly away. Of tamei patur milishaleach. When it comes to a non-kosher bird, there is no shliach hakein. Of tamei rovetz al beitzei of tahor. V'tahor rovetz al beitzei of tamei. If you have a non-kosher bird that is nesting on kosher eggs, or you have a kosher bird that is nesting on non-kosher eggs, patur milishaleach, then you don't have, there's no din of shiluach hakein. The korea zachar, the korea is translated as a partridge, a male partridge. Rabbi Lezer mechayev, v'chachamim potrim. Rabbi Lezer mechayev in shiluach hakein, v'chachamim poter. We'll see in the Gemara, but this is an oaf that goes around and nests on other people's birds. It incubates other birds' eggs. And therefore, the question is whether there's an implication of shiluach hakein here or not. All right. So now we have Rabbi Avin and Rabbi Meisha. Chanamar kol heicha ditnan ba'aretz ubechutz la'aretz shelo l'tzorech. That all the mishnayot that we had a list of mishnayot that had this format: kisui adam, oto ve'ed bino, gidon asher, the zroah lechaim lekeiba, the reshita geiz, and shiluach hakein. Six mishnayot, six prakim that all start with this format of ba'aretz ubechutz la'aretz b'fnei abayit shelo b'fnei abayit. So now the Gemara comes along and says, one of them says, and Rashi says, these are not, they're not arguing. They each made the statement, both statements are true and they both agree about this. That is, every Mishnah that wrote, we don't need to know that. It's obvious that it's in Aretz Chutz La'aretz because they're not mitzvot atuliyot ba'aretz. They're mitzvot haguf. Since they're mitzvot haguf, it's of course they apply outside of Eretz Yisrael. The only one where it was relevant to tell us this din was Mereshit HaGeiz. The last parak, where we talked about Reshita Geiz, Afuke mid Rabbi Eli, to come to exclude Rabbi Eli. Damar Reshita Geiz and Oheg Alabaretz. Rabbi Eli, who has the Hekesh, who has the connection between Truma and Reshita Geiz, says just like Truma is only applicable in Eretz Yisrael, so too Reshit HaGeiz and the Matnot are only applicable in Eretz Yisrael, not in Chutz La'aretz. So our Mishnah that says the Reshit HaGeiz applies Ba'aretz over Chutz La'aretz comes Lafuke Rabbi Eloi. So therefore it was necessary over there to tell us the din of Aretz and Chutz La'aretz. The remainder of them, it wasn't necessary to tell us that it applies both inside of Eretz Yisrael and outside of Eretz Yisrael, because all of these items have nothing to do with the land. You're talking about Kisui Adam, Otobet, Beno, Gidin Hashez, Rol HaChayim Kibah, Reshit HaGeiz, Shulach HaKein, none of them are Tvuyot Ba'aretz. So of course it applies both inside of Eretz Yisrael and outside of Eretz Yisrael. V'chad Amar, the other statement he made, is Kol Echad Etnan B'fnei Abayit, B'shlo B'fnei Abayit. All these Mishnayot that say that it is applicable both when the Beit HaMikdash is standing, when it's extant, and when it's not. Shalol Tzorech. Again, that wasn't necessary, because they have nothing to do with the Mikdash. Avad Mioto V'ed Beno. Oto V'ed Beno is the only one where it's relevant to mention the fact that the Mikdash, whether the Mikdash is standing or not, because Sakadat Chaminoho V'nyono D'Kodoshim Kitiv, the context in which Oto V'ed Beno is found, and we spoke about this when we dealt with that din, they are found within a parsha of Kodoshim. So then you would have thought, Bizman Diku Kodoshim Ninohog. Then, when the time there is Kodeshim, there is a relevance to Kodeshim, then there will be a din of Otovei Beno. It's not the Lekka Kodeshim, no Ninog. So then, when there's no Kodeshim, since that's the context in which it's fine, we should not be Noheg, the din of Otovei Beno, Kamash Malon, that's not true. That Otovei Beno applies whether the Mikdash is standing or not, whether Kodeshim are relevant or not, Otovei Beno is still relevant. So that's the only one we needed to know that din about, Bifnei Abayit and Shlo Bifnei Abayit. So if I take these six Mishnayot, the Aretz and Chutz La'aretz wasn't necessary except for the Mishnah of Reshit HaGeiz. V'hu Adin the Matanot. As Tosfot points this out, that's the same din as Matanot. In the previous parak, we pointed this out as well, that when at the end the Gemara came along and says the din is Kehayhani Tlate Sabe, that the din is like these three Talmidei Chachamim, one of them is that the din is like Rabbi Eloi. The din of Rabbi Eloi is that, when it comes to Reshit HaGeiz, it's only applicable in Eretz Yisrael, not in Chutz La'aretz. And over there, Rashi says, "V'hu adin l'matanot." It's the same thing for the matanot of the Zrola Chaim and Kebab, because they're both found in the same pasuk. They're same in the found category, and they're both nikash, they both have the hekesh of Truma. So just like the hekesh of Truma tells you Aretz, not Chutz La'aretz for the Reshit HaGeiz, it also tells you that for the matanot. So here, when the Gemara always is using Reshit HaGeiz, it means, "V'hu adin." The matanot, and that's what Tosafot mentions over here again, who adin levan matanot, v'chadiminayonakot, just mentions one of those two. But the din will be the same for two, and Rashi mentioned it as well, l'fugmeni rebelai, the mekishal l'chuma, v'adin nami matanot. So both of them point this out, that the din applies to both. Why did it only mention the Reshit HaGeiz? Because that's where Rabbi Eloi made his explicit statement. We have an explicit statement from Rabbi Eloi by Reshit HaGeiz that only applies in Eretz Yisrael. Matanot, we infer that should be the din as well, but his explicit statement is made about Reshit HaGeiz, so that's why the Gemara is quoting it in that context. So now we have the next piece. For Tavayu Amre, they both said, all of them that said that Chulin u'Mikdashim, it applies to both, was necessary. The Vad mi Gidon Asher. Except for Gidon Asher, where it wasn't necessary. So all of them, it's necessary to teach us that the din is equally applicable in Chulin, and it is in Kodashim, or... Out of those, four of the Mishnayot, out of the six Mishnayot, tell us, v'chulin v'lo mi'mukdashim. It applies to chulin and not mukdashim. So as Rashi points out, that's obviously the tzorech. It starts to tell us that, like for instance in our Mishnah here, Shulach HaKein, tells us it applies to chulin and not mukdashim. That's relevant, because it doesn't apply to mukdashim. So in the four Mishnayot that tell us that it is chulin and shalom mi'mukdashim, of course those are necessary. The other two that say v'chulin u'b'mukdashim, the only two of those, the two that have it that it applies to, Chulin and Mukdashim, Gidon Asher, and Otov et Beno. Those two apply both in Chulin and in Mukdashim. So then when they say all of them, Tavay Omer, Kol Hechad Etnan B'Chulin Mukdashim L'Tzorach, is necessary, the Vad Gidon Asher, except for Gidon Asher, it's really saying that it's necessary by Otov et Beno, and not by Gidon Asher. Because Otov et Beno is the only other one that's left over that says, B'Chulin u'bim Mukdashim. Rashi expands it and says the others are also important because the Talmud Shalom b'mukdashim is also the same as telling us it is b'mukdashim. So those are the tzorach. So the only one that accepted from that is Otovei Beno. We needed it. Gidon Asher, we didn't need it. So Gemara says pshita. It's obvious. Mishum de'ikdash pakalei isur Gidon Asher. Mine? Gidon Asher precedes the din of kodashim. Since it precedes the din of kodashim, just because it became kodesh, all of a sudden the isur of Gidon Asher disappears. Makes no sense to say that. So it's obvious that by the Gidon Asher, the saying of Chulin u'Mukdashim was unnecessary. It was obvious. Now the Gemara over there said, Valabu Kimna, did our Gemara back on the Mishnah ask what was the relevance of saying Chulunim Mikdashim? It's obvious that Chulunim Mikdashim it applies. So why did our Mishnah mention it? Vivladot Kodoshim. The Mishnah said the case there was in children. It's really fetuses of Kodoshim. Because when the fetus is formed, the Kodesh can apply to the fetus before the Isur Gid and Asher comes. So over there, I needed it for that case. Because Umay Daniel Kimna, La Mishum de Kashalan, Lo Litne. Isn't the reason that we established there would be Vladot Kodoshim, so that you can have a case in which the Kodoshim preceded the Gidin Asher, and therefore the mission is coming to tell me though, even though the Kodoshim preceded, the Din of Kodesh preceded the Din of Gidin Asher, nevertheless there is a Din of Gidin Asher. So isn't there a Chiddush? That's what the mission, we do need it there to teach us that Chiddush. So why is it that we set it up like Vladot Kodoshim? Because Lo Litne, our question was, don't write Chulinu Mekdashim, it's unnecessary. So Mikarinami Lo Tik Shaloch. Either the Tana L'Tzorech, Tana Nami Shalom L'Tzorech. That's exactly what the Gemara answers here is, that you asked the question, the reason that you asked this question, the reason that you gave the answer of Lodot Koshim is because you said it was unnecessary to write Chulin and Kodoshim. So the answer of the Gemara over there is, I have a Chiddush, Lodot Kodoshim. Along comes over here and they're suggesting, both Rabbi Abin and Rabbi Meisha says, you don't have to do that. Mikora, your whole question of why Lo Litne, don't write it? That's not a good question. The reason it's written is because Agav, all the other Mishnayot that write it, so therefore we're going to write it here as well. It's just to keep a parallel structure in all the Mishnayot. It's not relevant to ask what's the Chiddush of Chulin HaMekdashim. And therefore your question doesn't exist. You gave an answer, it's a nice answer, but it wasn't necessary. It happens to be true. But it's not necessary because the writing of the Chulin HaMekdashim here is not to teach us any Chiddush, it's just to keep a parallel structure between the Mishnayot, and you shouldn't learn anything out of it. So now the Gemara continues, B'chulin HaValo HaMekdashim. The Shulecha Ken applies in Chulin, but not in Mukdashim. Am I low? Why is that the case that you don't? Damakra. Shaleach, tishaleach et aim. That you have to send away the mother bird. But Misha, atam mitzuveh l'shalcho. It's a bird that you are commanded to send away. Yatzezesh, atam mitzuveh l'shalcho l'alaviyo l'de gizbar. Here you have a bird that you're not obligated, or you're not supposed to send it away. You're supposed to bring it to the gizbar, to the Mikdash. Tosfot over here quotes a Rashi that we do not have. He says that the Rashi, there was a quote in Rashi, Perishikul, just the time of Shum Tul Omer, a Torah, Shaleach Letakala. Torah doesn't tell you, send it away in order to get into trouble. If this animal is Kodesh, and you send it away, you shoo it away, you're going to create problems. You're sending a Kodesh animal out into the wild, and now someone else is going to come and take this bird and be in violation of Me'ilah. So the Torah doesn't say Shaleach to Shaleach to cause you problems or other people problems. So Tosfot rejects this Rashi. We don't have this Rashi. But he says, near the Pashtei the Kra Dorish. He says, no, that it's Poshup Shad in the Pasuk. The Mashma de Midi Shiachol Shalcho Mishtoi. Something that you can send away is what we're speaking about. Yeah. That's something you can send away. Over here, you can't send it away. You are obligated to bring it up to the Mikdash. Therefore, you can't send it away because you have another obligation to do something else with the bird. And so it's just the Pashup Shad of the Pasuk. Send away things that you can send away. Well, here you can't send it away, not because it's going to cause problems for other people, but because Me'ikar Adin, you need to bring this animal up to the Mikdash, and therefore sending it away is not doing what you're supposed to do with this bird. And that's what the problem is. And that's the Pashup Shad of the Pasuk. Again, we don't have this Rashi. That would be the way we explain the Gemara anyway, which is that Shalach to Shalach is you send it away when you have the right to send it away. Don't send it away when you don't have that right. It's not yours to send away. Here it belongs to Kodesh. You can't throw it away. It belongs to Kodesh. You have an obligation to bring it up to the Mikdash, not to send it away. It's a very strange Rashi. Again, we don't have it. It's not as relevant to the question, but you see that obviously there was an alternative view of how to explain this Gemara. All right, so now the Gemara says, Namar Ravina, Hilkach Of Tohor, Sheragata Nefesh. If you have a kosher bird that is chayav in shiluach hakein, if it went ahead and killed someone, patur milishlach, then you don't have to send it away. My tama for the same reason. Damar kura shaleach tishaleach ataim b'misha ata mutzuveh l'shalcho. Here is something that you have the obligation to send it away. Yatzazet shiata mutzuveh l'shalcho. Here you're not supposed to send away this bird. Elo labiyo l'beitin. You already have another obligation on you to bring the bird to beitin. Hey chidami. What's the case of this bird? Ida gamar dinei. If the bird already had a Gemar Din, they already Paskin Beit Din said that this bird killed and had deserving of the death penalty, Bar Ketalohu, it should have been put to death. What's it doing flying around here? Elo Delo Gemar Dinei. It doesn't have a Gemar Din yet. Ubay Le Atuy Le Beit Din. And nevertheless, you still have an obligation to bring it to Beit Din. Bikiyumi Beit, Ube Arta Harami Kirbecho. Because you have an obligation to remove the evil from amongst your midst. As Rashi says, mitzvah kol pogea b'chayvei mita. Anybody who bumps into someone who is chayav mita, lav yan the Beit Din, you're under obligation to bring them to Beit Din. They're the vayir rishayim Yisrael, to remove these bad apples from amongst Klal Yisrael. So if there's someone who is deserving of the mita, you have to bring them to Beit Din. We're not asking you to do vigilante justice, but we're asking you to bring the individual to Beit Din, so Beit Din can take care of this situation. That's true of a person, that's true of an animal. So you are an obligation to bring this bird to Beit Din, because of Yartha Rabbi Kirbecha. That preceded your obligation to Shaleach to Shalach, so now you can't send it away, because you have an obligation to keep it and not send it away. I'm going to stop here.